9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
A smart gun is a gun that knows who its owner is.
Smart gun advocates argue hundreds of accidental deaths and possibly many suicides could be prevented each year with technology.
If you have a gun that recognizes its owner, what that means is that somebody who's not its owner can't use it. That somebody else could be a criminal who wants to steal your gun and use it on you. That somebody else could be your 5-year-old kid.
Those opposed say smart guns will never be as reliable as what's currently on the market.
Your iPhone typically now has fingerprint recognition technology. It doesn't always work. When it doesn't work, you're inconvenienced. In a firearm, if you're using it for self-defense and it doesn't work, you're not inconvenienced, you're dead.
But as we get closer to things like driverless cars, saying it's not possible to improve a product through innovation, even something like a gun, is a harder case to make.
Boeing doesn't put planes in the air just saying, it should be reliable. They do tests. That's not to say it's going to be trivial or going to be easy, but we can engineer reliability.
As we report this story, a new smart gun is about to launch.
A 9mm called the IP9 makes major strides in another area, data collection. Sensors embedded throughout the weapon record information each time it's fired.
We check it out. Plus, we tell you about a $1 million opportunity in New York City. For many gun owners, the real concern about smart gun development is the technology could be used as backdoor gun control.
I think the NRA and people who are concerned about the smart gun issue who don't want to have to buy smart guns are concerned that if there is a seemingly viable smart gun on the market, then it will find its way into some kind of mandate.
Officially, the NRA does not oppose smart gun development.
It's hard for the NRA to hate on a voluntary option that could potentially increase the number of people interested in firearms in the United States.
The NRA does oppose smart gun mandates, including a New Jersey law that requires all guns sold there to be smart guns once the state deems them viable. Americans love guns. Americans love tech. But high-tech guns?
This is the future of everything. A look ahead from the Wall Street Journal.
From the newsroom in New York, I'm Jennifer Strong, and this is the future of everything.
We need to develop new technologies that make guns safer. If we can set it up so you can't unlock your phone unless you got the right fingerprint.
Then President Barack Obama speaking last year at the White House.
Why can't we do the same thing for our guns?
Since then, there's been a lot of attention focused on this young college freshman.
It's not exactly a good idea to have guns in a college room.
Right. Kai Klepfer developed the first fingerprint reader that unlocks a handgun.
And so this is basically...
His MIT dorm room also serves as the office of his company, BioFire.
These are my guns, aka mechanisms and pieces of plastic.
For the record, there are no weapons in here. Those are with his parents in Colorado. He demonstrated his prototype for us last year, and the Wall Street Journal's personal tech columnist, Jeffrey Fowler, tried it out.
Ultimately, it comes down to this. Does a smart gun work? Kai wasn't shy about letting me try his.
We've now erased the firearm and added you as the owner. It's going to try to recognize my fingerprint, but it's just going to flash white because I'm not enrolled. Additionally, if I go here and I try to pull the trigger, nothing's going to happen. If I hand it to you, and do the same thing. Got it?
All right. Finger on the sensor.
Yep. And it's going to turn red.
We are red. Let's do this.
A reliable smart gun has yet to hit the U.S. market. But for Klepfer, that's not a question of if, but when.
One of the most common firearms on the market today is called the Colt 1911, which, as the name suggests, was developed by Colt in 1911. And that's ridiculous. You know, that's an industry where a Model T is competitive with a Tesla, right? Tesla's just as good as the Model T because there's no Tesla.
One question he hears often is whether his gun can be hacked.
What we're doing is different because it has no external communication. So we can 100% guarantee that nobody's going to be able to do anything with it from a distance, and we can say that pretty much anybody short of a Google security team isn't going to be able to do anything with it, even with extended physical access to it.
But will there be a market for it? There's strong opposition to smart gun development from gun enthusiasts because of the New Jersey mandate.
We're opposing mandates. The NRA opposes mandates. We're developing a smart gun. The NRA doesn't really care. And this could be a way that more people would be involved in the firearm community, maybe grew up around firearms or use them for their jobs, but aren't comfortable having them in their house. This could actually change sort of that equation for a lot of people.
Klepfer's strongest support comes from Silicon Valley super angel Ron Conway.
If we can do driverless cars, send people to space, why can't we authenticate a gun?
Conway refers to him as the Mark Zuckerberg of guns. If anyone is in a position to make such a statement, it's him. Conway was an early investor in Facebook, also Google, PayPal, and about 700 other companies.
2 years ago, I would agree with the skeptics that, oh, can it be done? We haven't seen it done yet. Now it's about perfecting the prototype and getting market acceptance. And that's all the things that innovative companies have been doing forever.
But gaining market acceptance is not straightforward. When the first smart gun became available for consumers in 2014, only two U.S. gun stores dared put it on the shelves, and both quickly pulled it after facing a flood of death threats.
How can the NRA or people want to prohibit a gun when we're supposed to be pro-gun?
Andy Raymond owns one of those stores in the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C.
How can they say that a gun should be prohibited? How hypocritical is that? If you're pro-gun, does it matter what kind of gun the person has?
Even if the New Jersey law is repealed, much of the consumer gun market views smart gun technology as a disguised attempt at gun control. Raymond posted this video on Facebook as he sat vigil overnight in his store.
So anyway, obviously I received numerous death threats today. I really appreciate that. That's classy. That's a great thing for gun rights when you threaten to shoot somebody.
But not everyone thinks it's a lost cause. Don Kendall Jr. is a philanthropist and a gun owner who advocates for smart guns.
Been a hunter all my life, basically, since my dad bundled me and my brother in the back of our station wagon to go duck hunting on Long Island when I was 5 or 6.
His dad is Don Kendall Sr., the chairman and chief executive of PepsiCo for more than 20 years.
The light bulb moment for me was when I realized that being a philanthropist or being a social investor wasn't just about giving money away. It was about sort of translating my passion for startups into startups that could make the world a better place. I had become a social entrepreneur and had done a number of things in the education space, but I happened to live in a town called Weston, Connecticut, and Weston is two towns away from Newtown.
The school shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, is among the deadliest in U.S. history. 10 days before Christmas Eve in 2012, 20 children between the ages of 6 and 7 were shot dead, along with 6 adults. The shooter was 20 years old. He also killed his mother and himself.
When the Sandy Hook shootings happened, I mean, it was a big deal for our country, obviously, but it was a huge deal for my little town of Weston because I'm a volunteer EMT and our units were responding. And at the time, our youngest son was in first grade. You know, my kids played soccer with Newtown kids. My philanthropy wasn't focused on gun violence at the time, but I knew I had to do something.
So Kendall got together with other social investors, including Ron Conway.
He had pulled together a group of investors and philanthropists, folks like John Doerr from Kleiner Perkins and Eric and Wendy Schmidt from Google. They had this idea of putting together kind of a social venture fund that would invest in startups that would have some kind of bearing on the gun violence problem. The idea was to invest in 4 areas: smart guns, brain health, school safety, and big data.
He knew he was stepping with both feet into a politically charged issue.
But that debate is sort of not the point. As a social entrepreneur, I felt like there were free market solutions that could address this problem. I'm a big believer that capitalism can be a force for social good.
They decided to start with smart guns.
The polarized political debate, for all its sort of heat and noise, had actually created a white space for entrepreneurs to come in. And my view of smart guns is it's not a question of whether smart guns will eventually be sold. It's a question of when.
Gun makers aren't investing in smart gun R&D because of the politics. Kendall began looking for startups to invest in, but says he didn't find any.
The problem wasn't providing funding for entrepreneurs. The problem that we had to solve was, how do we get more entrepreneurs into the field? The same way that the Ansari X Prize sort of stimulated the development of a private space industry through a $10 million challenge, we came up with the idea of using a prize competition to stimulate the smart gun space.
They put out the call and announced a $1 million prize and received over 200 entries.
So we were actually shocked at the scale of the response. When you say the word smart guns, the satellite trucks show up because of the political nature of it, but the innovators themselves were really green. You've met Kai. He's a kid. He's a really smart kid, a really creative kid, and I do think he's on to something with his idea. But there's a long way between a kid like Kai and a seasoned entrepreneur who's on his or her third startup.
At this point, Kendall says it's going to be a long time before smart guns are able to fulfill the promise.
What I think this industry needs is a well-known entrepreneur, somebody like a Jeff Bezos or an Elon Musk, you know, the equivalent of that, to come in and start a Tesla, start a Blue Horizons, you know, start a company that could totally change the way firearms are sold in the United States. It's going to take between $15 and $20 million to build a truly market-ready smart gun.
And even then, he doesn't see a traditional path to market.
Because gun retailers are going to be so shy and reluctant to sell a smart gun, as we've seen already, if it were me, I would go direct, you know, direct to consumer. As opposed to through retailers.
Another theory is to go after niche groups in highly specific situations.
Jonathan Mossberg, I'm CEO of iGun Technology Corp.
Mossberg is a third-generation shotgun maker from the oldest family-owned firearms company in America. His family has been selling weapons to the military since World War II.
Products need to be legitimized. Everybody would love to go to the police force or the military and say, hey, they legitimized my product. This is probably not going to happen that way. But we have a situation where we're arming teachers now. Now, you can either be for or against arming teachers. But by golly, if a child got a hold of a firearm in a classroom, that would be an unbelievably devastating situation. If you're going to have a gun in a school or a classroom, it should be one that if it's taken away, can't be used by anybody else.
Mossberg created perhaps the world's first smart gun, a user-authorized shotgun called the iGun, in the late 1990s. The token that activates it is a ring. It looks like ordinary jewelry, but hidden inside is a chip the size of a grain of rice.
Over 14 billion different combinations, it's more likely that you and I have the same DNA sequence than would have the same ring. So it's really, really smart.
He says the rings provide flexibility.
Let's say the police chief could actually operate every gun in the precinct. Two partners could operate each other's gun. So if one was wounded, he could pick up his partner's gun and shoot it. If somebody left the force, you could deprogram it. Literally any combination and permutation you can think of, we can do on the firearm.
His goal was to create a smart gun that was at least as reliable as everything else his family builds.
Tested it to mil-spec 3433, I believe it was E at the time, which is a 3,000-round buckshot torture test. The government allows you 0.1% malfunction rate. Any gun that you go into a gun store right now, probably 90%+ will not meet that. This is specifically for the military. We pass that with 0% malfunctions.
The battery lasts about 10 years, and then he says it will keep working for another few years, but beep every 15 minutes until you change the battery. But he says he was way ahead of his time.
The marketing team takes over. Now we do focus groups. We fly around the country. We spend a lot more money. And we're talking to these people, and they're like, well, I don't trust a circuit board in my gun. I don't even like circuit boards in anything. We have no faith in technology. And I was standing behind the two-way glass saying, I can't believe this. You know, this is crazy. We shelved the product and the whole idea. We just said there was no market, no real market demand, and it went on ice.
As he says this, he grabs his gun lock keys.
I actually kept these for home defense. I had one by the bedside.
And we take a look at what he built.
I keep it locked when it's not in use. And my wife and I were out to dinner one time. We had a babysitter at the house, and I said, oh my gosh, you know, is the gun locked? And she said, oh, you know, usually we do, but I have a feeling it might not be tonight. And we got home, and the gun was locked, but I had this level of security knowing that even if the kids got a hold of it, which they wouldn't do because they've been trained, but if they did, nothing would happen. So that whole extra level of security is valuable for us. And I'm not saying it's valuable for everybody, but if it makes sense to you, then you can buy it. And if it doesn't make sense, don't buy it, but don't say nobody should have it. It's a freedom of choice. I grew up in America, which meant freedom. You don't have to buy something you don't want to buy, but don't tell me. And that's a little resistance that we're facing now. So I'm going to grab the gun now. And hear that? Instantly on. And as soon as I let go of it, it's dead. Nothing happens. So I can actually pull the trigger for you. The safety is off. A regular gun would fire now. With my left hand, I'll pull the trigger. Nothing happens. With my right hand.
Mossberg's technology may be coming off ice. He's looking at the market again and says a half a generation later, people realize there are circuit boards in cars, and they know when they get on a plane, they're trusting their lives to technology.
And now we've got to squeeze it down into a handgun. That's where the market is. And that's what we're working on, which is really the easiest part of the whole nut. It's going to take money. The money is probably not going to come from the firearms industry. They've had a wonderful, successful decade plus of business, and they who touch the smart gun concept can get burned. It happened to Colt, it happened to Smith & Wesson. They are printing money. They really don't need to touch this.
But there is one smart gun company that expects to launch a product this year. Despite the failure of its IP1 handgun, Armatix is giving the U.S. market another try. But like everything involving a smart gun, it's not without controversy.
The way it was launched, the way it was handled, the way the whole product was done was detrimental to themselves, to their investors, and to the smart gun industry. So I would be cautious of how they might introduce this and what the product is. But I wish them luck.
We sent the Wall Street Journal's Jason Bellini and Matt McDonald to the Armatix factory in Munich, Germany, to check it out.
It's safe to say the company's first attempt at entering the U.S. market was a disaster. Despite the involvement of the legendary gunmaker Ernst Mach, who allegedly designed the weapon used to kill Osama bin Laden, not a single Armatix IP1 smart gun was sold in the United States. But Armatix is giving it another shot. This time with a new designer, a new chief executive, and a new gun, a 9mm called the IP9. It sounds, and to the casual observer, looks like any other pistol. The prototype's being demonstrated for me inside a meat locker-sized firing chamber. Its key feature is how you turn it on. By entering a code on the inside of the grip,
just pressing three times,
with a user-determined sequence of finger taps. It's also how you deactivate the weapon.
So if any third person is able to get access to the weapon, it's more or less useless.
That's George Yanin, the gray-bearded, bespectacled physicist responsible for developing the IP9's inner workings. The test firing booth there suppresses the noise enough so as not to disturb Armatix's corporate neighbors.
You see a lot of software development parts.
Yanin's office is down the hall, his desk strewn with tools, circuit boards, wires, and IP9s, stripped down to their inner hardware.
What you see here is a central chamber where all the microcontroller stuff is in.
He spent the past 2 years soldering circuitry under a microscope. Yanin says the new IP9 model makes major strides in another area, data collection. Sensors embedded throughout the weapon record information each time it's fired. Was the gun pointing down, straight ahead,
or even up?
Helmut Brontner, the managing director for the project, sees law enforcement as a prime market because it keeps a log of exactly when the gun was fired. It can also record GPS coordinates via a smartphone app.
It's up to the customer how he will use the weapon.
The technology still isn't quick enough to allow instant owner recognition. In the face of a threat, Yanin says, the user will want to put the gun in active, ready-to-fire mode.
So a law enforcement officer, for example, would he or she keep the gun on at all times, or in an emergency just enter the code and then fire the weapon?
Yeah. I'm sure that this guy will enter the PIN in the morning when he starts going around, and then the weapon will be active all the time.
How that will be received by law enforcement is an open question. I asked Yanin to show me, with an unloaded prototype, what a police officer would do if someone tried to take his gun away from him.
I'm wrestling you right
now. Yeah.
You can stop it from...
Yes, I've stopped it.
You stopped.
Yanin tells me the company's still wrestling with the LED indicator lights located at the top of the pistol grip. Should red mean that it's ready to fire or that it's locked? The answer perhaps depends on who the audience is. For gun owners, this was a key problem with the last release. On firearms, a red dot means the safety is off and it's ready to fire. On the IP1, it meant the opposite. That's something the company says it intends to change. It will also allow customers the option of activating the gun using a special watch or smartphone app and access to a range of other features.
We are able to make software updates. Mm. We are able to make interface updates. So we are very flexible to add more functionality in the future, even if the weapon is on the market.
The Wall Street Journal's Jason Bellini and Matt McDonald reporting. It would be all too easy to frame the smart gun debate as simply the tension between right and left, tech-savvy and tech-phobic. But it's not so black and white. John Stokes is a former editor at Wired and co-founder of technology site Ars Technica. He takes issue with the idea that a smart gun will make people safer, including kids.
The smart gun doesn't have a unique value proposition there because there's an existing solution for that that's backward compatible with every gun on the market, and that's the gun safe.
Stokes says he believes most of the interest and investment in smart gun technology comes from people who don't really like guns.
Gun control types like to tinker with gun design, and you can see this in the assault weapons ban, how it tries to dictate the details of an AR-15, whether or not you can have a piece of plastic hanging off the front, aka a foregrip, whether or not the stock can be adjustable. And I think the NRA and people who are concerned about the smart gun issue who don't want to have to buy smart guns are concerned that if there is a seemingly viable smart gun on the market, then it will find its way into some kind of mandate.
And he says proof otherwise will come when those who most depend on guns accept a smart weapon.
I think when you see special forces, if they were to enthusiastically take up a smart gun, then the civilian market will follow pretty much overnight. But the public doesn't want to guinea pig this.
He doesn't disagree with Jonathan Mossberg, though, about niche markets for smart guns, such as air marshals or police.
Police are very concerned with having their guns turned on them in a struggle. Absolutely, people that open carry would like some kind of solution that guarantees that in a struggle, the gun's not going to be taken away from them and they're not going to be shot. That's kind of the one thing that, apart from retention holsters, there's not a great solution for.
I hop the subway and head downtown to chat with a policeman who goes several steps further.
Eric Adams, Brooklyn Borough President.
Before getting into politics, Adams spent 22 years as a member of the New York City Police Department.
Yeah, no, this is really a no-brainer. Phones continue to get smart. Technology is smart. Our guns can't be dumb. As a gun owner, I own three guns. And at one time, someone broke into my home and stole one of my guns. And that gun is still out there. If it was a smart gun with smart gun technology, they would not be able to cause harm with that gun. We had a case in Philadelphia where a police officer's gun was stolen and was used against another police officer. Everything has evolved around it. The gun has not.
He says the best place to vet these new technologies should be with law enforcement.
When you look at the New York City Police Department, their men and women go to the firing range twice a year. So you have 30,000 officers twice a year, that's 60,000 appearances, and they shoot off several boxes of ammunition. So you're talking about hundreds of thousands of practices to iron out the kinks. Now, of course, you should not put that gun on patrol with an officer until we have gone through the right vetting process, allow the professionals to look at it, knock it around, see how it responds in cold weather, hot weather, when it's dropped, all of the things that could be done.
Adams says he hopes technology will someday help recover guns that are lost or stolen.
If we could find our phones when they're lost by simply using an app, and great arrests have taken place from people who committed crimes and had those stolen devices, we want to do the same things with smart guns. There's no reason that a permanent and embedded chip could be in a gun. It won't impact the functionality of the gun, but if it's lost or stolen, the police officer can immediately identify who's in possession of that gun.
I ask him if he thinks that might scare people off. There's long been an argument that such technology could be used to identify which homes have guns and where they're kept.
So it's not about allowing the police to know who are all the gun owners and what devices they have. It's about that when a person identifies their gun is lost or stolen, they could immediately notify the police, use their devices to find that gun. Just as we find our phone, we find our gun.
Adam says he believes at least some of the pushback is generational.
Technology is the way of life. So yes, there are some who are still holding on to the 8-track methodology in an iPhone age. And the reality is we know that there's a sunsetting of all of the reluctancies of not moving with technology. History is replete with examples of that, and there's no different here.
He's putting his money where his mouth is. As we report this piece, he's holding a contest. The prize? $1 million out of his capital budget. It will go to the New York City college or university that designs the best smart gun. Entries will be evaluated through testing in collaboration with the NYPD. Adams expects to name a winner this summer. The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from The Wall Street Journal's Chris Moran, Jeffrey Fowler, Jason Bellini, Matt McDonald, Tanya Bustos, and Charlie Turner. Thank you for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong from The Newsroom in New York.
Love this show? Check out others by visiting wsj.com/podcasts. See our full selection under programs. The Wall Street Journal. Listen ambitiously.